This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
David Swanson joins me live in studio. He's online at warisacrime.org. And his most recent book by the same name, not by the same name, but close, War is a Lie. Rick Sincere is also with us, the former chairman of the Libertarian Party of Virginia. He's online at ricksincere.com. They join me to explore the top news stories of 2010. Gentlemen, how are you?
Good to be here.
Yes, great to be here.
Thank you for coming in. I hope you had a healthy Christmas, unlike myself. I hope your Christmas was not deluged with... it was really sick. I hope you weren't in bed all Christmas Day like I was.
No, we're getting over that at my house.
Did you have it? The stomach virus thing?
Oh, a couple of weeks ago, everybody was sick.
Oh, yeah. It was brutal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's like the worst 24 hours I've had in years. I couldn't believe that. Yeah, I mean, the minute I lay down, I got to go to the bathroom again. Anyway, that's enough of that. 5:12 on the clock. Rick, let's start with you. I'm curious. And we won't do a top 10 or countdown or anything like that. Just you throw them out as you see them. News stories that you really want to put a spotlight on, that you think were either underplayed or overplayed, and why they make your list as the most significant news stories of 2010.
Well, I think one of the stories we talked about a lot in the past year, obviously, was the election and the fact that Republicans took control of the House of Representatives with, I think, a new majority of 63 new Republicans. And a lot of that was motivated by operations of the Tea Party movement around the country. But that wasn't as true in Virginia. None of the new Republicans who were elected to Congress from Virginia, not Robert Hurd or Morgan Griffith or Scott Ridgel, none of them were associated with the Tea Party so much. But I think the people who noticed that are underestimating what the Tea Party might become in Virginia. And we already know that one of the leaders of the Tea Party, Jamie Radke, has announced that she's running for the U.S. Senate in 2012.
Yeah, that news just broke today, didn't
yeah,
it? Yeah,
she filed papers with the Federal Election Commission. I spoke to her a couple weeks ago, and she said she was still thinking about it. I guess she's not thinking about it anymore. She's in it for real. And the thing that people are underestimating about the Tea Party, at least as much as like establishment Republicans are, is that they're creating a sort of a deep bench for future political activists and politicians. And I know for a fact that there are people associated with the Tea Party movement who are looking for candidates to oppose Republican members of the General Assembly in the primary season this year. They're not just going to be going after Democrats. They're going to be going after Republican incumbents in the state Senate and the House of Delegates.
So that really could be the big angle on this particular story is that, the Tea Party is here, and they look like they're going to be around at least for a few years. But the most significant thing about them, and David, would you agree with this, is that they want to take on members of the Republican Party who they think might be too liberal, just as they would members of the Democratic Party.
Absolutely. And I certainly, nobody's ever accused me of underestimating them. I think it's exactly what's missing on the left. Some of us have started up an organization called the Job Party, jobparty.org, as an alternative. I mean, on the left, there's nothing like the Tea Party, the Chamber of Commerce, Fox News. There are no institutions that just want to move everybody to the left, Democrats and Republicans alike. Everybody is subservient to the Democratic Party. Whereas on the right, you have groups like the Tea Party that are willing to hurt the Republican Party as long as they move everybody three steps to the right. And that's admirable, even though completely misguided in terms of the policies they're pushing. That's what we ought to have from the side of peace and justice and decency.
Yeah. David Swanson is online at davidswanson.org, and his most recent book is War is a Lie. So, David, further thoughts about the Tea Party, the significance of the Tea Party, and then what makes your list for the most significant story of 2010?
Well, I think the number one story, especially here, that got misunderstood in the election, and then the number one story that didn't get told at all are first of all who we just voted out and who we just voted in. Right? We went from a Republican to a Democrat to a Republican here in this district, and never changed their fundamental positions on the big issues. Tom Perriello voted for every war dollar he could get his hands on, as will this guy, as would have the former congressman. And we have this whole brouhaha and the Tea Party nonsense about cutting spending, and yet we can't get a conversation started at all about touching the biggest single piece. Over half of every dollar of income tax is just off the radar screen. And every time that Congress votes for more money for the wars, for the military, for everything that our so-called Defense Department does around the world, it doesn't even get reported in the 5th District of Virginia. Nobody even hears about it. It's as if these wars fund themselves. And so we think that we went from some sort of socialist, communist, leftist, to some radical right winger. And, you know, now we'll start seeing the MoveOn.orgs of the world protesting war spending again if it's Republicans doing it, you know. But people are so misinformed. And then the story that didn't get told at all is that across the country, Republicans took over state legislatures just in time to redraw the districts. And the gerrymandering is going to be done so much better than ever before. Even in this recent election, in most districts, seats were just not in play. I mean, they are just guaranteed for one party or the other. That is going to be overwhelmingly the case. And so organizations like the Tea Party pushing for primary challenges, and anybody who does that from the left, those are going to be the only place where any elections change hands at all. Seats in Congress are going to be guaranteed for one party or the other, and much more so for the Republicans than would have been the case at any time in recent decades.
We're talking with David Swanson and Rick Sincere, and the phone lines are open for you at 977-1070. Your thoughts about these news stories, and perhaps you want to put one on the list. Your most significant news story of 2010, whether it was reported or perhaps completely missed by the local or national media. 977-1070. Would love to hear from you as we close out 2010, your most significant news story of 2010. And before we go to the phones, Rick, David brought up war spending. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that as a libertarian, because I'm often dismayed as well. It seems like most of the chatter seems to be about earmarks when, at best, what is that, like 1% of the budget? And yet, over half of the budget now is going towards a military budget. We spend more on military, quote-unquote, defense, empire building, than every other country in the world combined. And yet no one on the right or the left seems to be willing to address that issue.
I completely agree with you and David on that. There's too much money being spent on war making. We've got too many American soldiers in too many countries around the world. And we're not just talking about Marines guarding the embassy. We're talking about, you know, people being deployed for real military service in far-flung reaches of the globe. And too much money is being spent on the war machine, and we're really not getting an effect out of that. It was really interesting during the Don't Ask, Don't Tell debate, which is another one of my big stories for the year. Several opponents of reform said, we can't make this change while we're engaged in two wars. We can do this when we're at peace, but we're in a state of perpetual war. You know, essentially they're saying we never want to make this change because the war's never going to end, at least the way it's currently defined. And I was pleased to see the Congress, and especially a good number of Republican members of Congress, stand up for the rights of gay and lesbian Americans to serve their country and repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And that's one of my stories for the year. And the thing is about that, 10 years from now, people are going to wonder, why was that a big story in 2010? People are just going to look at it and say that was a no-brainer. Why did it take so long to happen?
We're talking with Rick Sincere and David Swanson. Let's go to the phones. Caller, what's your first name?
My name is Chris.
Chris, thank you for your patience, buddy. You go right ahead.
Yeah, I think the biggest story of this year was probably the WikiLeaks, basically, and all the compromising of our secret intelligence being put out in front of the world. I think that's going to have ramifications and repercussions for probably years to come. And also, I wanted to comment on the military spending. It seems to me that, you know, we didn't ask for New York to be attacked. I know there are people that probably disagree with that, that think we probably deserve to have those people die on the streets of New York. But I have a tendency to disagree with them. And, you know, we were attacked, and we're at war. We're probably going to be at war for the next 10 or 20 years, I'm sorry to say. But when the Arabs try to take care of their own house instead of slitting our throats, I'm sure that we'll probably stop being at war with them.
Chris, thank you for the call. I appreciate
it. Have a nice day.
Yeah, thank you so much. And we got a line open at 977-1070. We're talking with Rick Sincere and David Swanson. And just to set the record straight, I don't think that anyone who questions the spending on that this country spends on its military budget would for one second think that anybody deserved to be killed on 9/11 in New York City or anywhere, any American. And I would like to think that at least, and I am certainly not one of them. I think that's a little crazy to make that connection.
And David, I don't think anybody who opposes high amounts of military spending opposes the idea that the United States has a right to defend itself against attack. I think that you would agree with that. I mean, if we actually are attacked by a foreign enemy, we should defend ourselves. But on the other hand, you know, Iraq had nothing to do with attacks on 9/11, and yet we invaded that country and we're occupying it.
David?
Well, you know, we've sliced the planet up into zones, Northern Command, Southern Command, Central Command. We dominate outer space in terms of weaponization. If a single other nation on this planet thought that it needed to defend itself in remotely the manner that our little 5% of the world's population does, there would be all-out global war. I mean, it's just it can't be done because we are dominating the planet with 1,000 military bases in other people's countries that, in fact, do have a large effect. They create hostility and they generate wars. And when people fly airplanes into buildings and tell you they're doing it because of your bases in Saudi Arabia and what you're doing in Palestine, it doesn't excuse it. Nothing excuses mass murder. Nothing. But to continue the very behavior and to escalate the very behavior that provokes those responses is insanity. It is the definition of insanity. And we are doing that. And there's absolutely no justification for it. So do we want to be safer or do we want to be less safe? Is it more important to be more macho, to be more militaristic, to outspend not just the next 17 nations of the world combined, but more than that, or to actually be safer by scaling back activities that are endangering us? I mean, we have predictably increased global terrorism every year, including this one, of the global war on terrorism, predictably. And to continue that and to say that, you know, that to oppose that insane, disastrous agenda is to support the killing of people on 9/11 is insanity. I mean, I know fear makes you stupid, but this is a level of stupidity that the world can't survive.
We're talking with David Swanson. Rick Sincere is also with us. 977-1070 is the phone number. Caller, stay with us. We'll be right with you. Rick?
The other point I would make is that terrorism can't be defeated militarily. Terrorism has to be defeated through essentially criminal investigations and good intelligence.
It's like a war on murder.
Yes.
I've always thought of it that way.
Well,
exactly.
you need to investigate it like a crime, and you don't need to go after it with tanks and planes.
And the Taliban was happy to turn, not happy, but willing to turn bin Laden over to a third country to be put on trial without any prima facie evidence, both before and after 9/11. And our president was not in the least bit interested, said not long after invading Afghanistan that he had no interest in bin Laden. There was no desire to prosecute the criminals or deter repetitions of the crime. There was a desire to have an excuse for war and a crazy excuse for war on other unrelated nations as well. There was a survey done a couple of weeks ago. Over 90% of Afghans in the southern provinces where a lot of the killing and dying is happening couldn't tell you what 9/11 was. They hadn't heard of it. And here we are killing them because they're the Arabs who did this to us when they aren't Arabs and they haven't even heard of the thing yet. It's insanity.
Let's go to the phones. Caller, what's your first name, please?
Hey, this is Gary.
Hey, Gary, thanks for the call. Real quick, go right ahead.
Yeah, very interesting. Professor Ed Burton, economist from UVA, is on with Jane and Rick in the morning once a month. He says our biggest economic concern is solving the Social Security and Medicare costs. I'd like to have your guest respond to that. And secondly, I'd like to have them tell us where they would pull soldiers back to the United States. I think we could pull soldiers out of Germany and Japan, some of those places, and then leave our soldiers where it's dangerous. Let's go from there.
Gary, thank you for the call. And Rick, I'll give you a chance to respond really quick, and then we'll continue this after a break.
Well, yeah, I think the entitlements explosion is a real problem. My friend Jim Bacon has written a book called Boomergeddon, and I think he would be a great guest on this program, Coy, if you haven't already had him. He's done the math on this, and it's just the debt that we're going to be facing is going to lead to economic collapse if we don't do something about it in the next 10 to 15 years, and faster if we can.
Let's continue our conversation with Rick Sincere. He's the former chairman of the Libertarian Party of Virginia, online journalist, ricksincere.com. David Swanson is also with us. His most recent book is War is a Lie. You can learn more online at warisalie.org and davidswanson.org. David, let's pick up right where we left off. The budget, the impending, I mean, all the real experts that look at everything say, no, that's not the problem. That's not the problem. The problem really is entitlement spending and the budget, which is just spells doom and disaster if we don't do something about it.
Well, we've been preached this nonsense for years now, but it's now actually true. We have actually damaged the Social Security fund with this recent bill that included the tax cuts for the multimillionaires, in that we took a cut out of payroll taxes that go to fund Social Security. So now there is actually something that can be said, but we shouldn't have done that. It's an outrage. It's a disgrace. It needs to be undone immediately. And then we need to understand the need for separate conversations about discretionary spending and spending on so-called entitlements that is not in danger, that is not in debt, that is not troubled and in need of relief. We don't need to stop funding schools and roads and hospitals in order to pay for Social Security. We just need to get our hands off the Social Security, which, you know, now we've gone and dug into that money, which we shouldn't have done.
Rick?
Yeah, one of the problems is that the federal government borrows money from the Social Security Trust Fund to pay for general funds. And this is something that I think is underreported at the state level. This is a real problem, not so much in Virginia, but it is still a problem in Virginia. But around the country, you've got state governments borrowing heavily from their public employee pension funds to pay for current expenses. And you look at a place like California, it's just going to lead to an utter collapse of the government because they can't sustain that anymore. Virginia plays the shell game too, but not to as great an extent as places like Illinois and California. And eventually these chickens are going to come home to roost and we're going to have to deal with it. And
didn't the federal government bail out New York though when I was a kid? I mean, didn't?
No, they refused.
There
was
a
famous headline in the New York Post, Ford to New York, drop dead. And you know what? New York survived that. New York came back. They bounced back from that collapse because, you know, when they hit rock bottom, they had to make changes that resulted in, you know, like cleaning up Times Square. And I mean, if you look at the Superman movies from the 1970s, you see what a dismal place
yeah.
New York was. And today it's the safest city in America. It's setting aside the general economic malaise that we're in, New York is really booming. And that's despite having higher taxes than almost any state in the country. But you know, when New York hit rock bottom, they had to make changes in the way they operated. It became more business friendly, became a high tech mecca, and the changes were almost the exact result of the federal government saying, "We're not going to bail you out because that would just that's the moral hazard. You'll just come back for more later."
Yeah. David, what else has made your list of the most significant news stories of 2010?
Well, I taking off on the other question that the recent caller had on which countries would we not have our bases in, and I would say, of course, as with our founding fathers and the rest of our government in the early years of this country, all of them, we have no business having our troops outside of our nation. Get out of everywhere. We're building a base right now on a South Korean island not far from China where the people are engaged in massive civil resistance to our military's construction operation because they don't want to provoke another Korean War, as well as they want their coast left alone and to be able to fish and so forth. But I think that the stories that aren't told so much are the stories that are the same every year. And sometimes we think they should be different for partisan reasons. But in 2010, as in every year before, bigger military, more bases in more countries, more bases in South America, in Europe, in Poland, in Colombia, in Italy, in Germany, in more drone wars, more ground wars, a still unacknowledged ground war in Pakistan, confirmed in WikiLeaks, among other places, more a bigger percentage of our budget being military, more secrecy, more militarized power, more presidential power.
You're describing Orwell to me. I mean, is that what's happening?
We are moving in the direction of what Orwell saw, absolutely. And we will call it defense, and we will call it humanitarianism. But it is a militarized society that wants you listen to the callers to this show and every other show. They want the government not to tell them what it's doing. They want everything to be kept secret. We don't want to know how many wars we're engaged in, what that our government conspired with China to kill a global warming restraining effort last year, that our embassy in Norway does nothing but sell Lockheed Martin weapons to Norway, that we are complicit in a military coup in Honduras. We don't want to know any of this stuff. We want to be kept in the dark for our own good, just as we want politicians who will ignore opinion polls and stick to their principles. We want to be ignored. This is very Orwellian.
Rick, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, one of the big stories around here has been that we've talked about on the show before, the TSA searches. And now up in the D.C. area, they're searching people who are trying to get on the metro. We've got the red light cameras. That, you know, there's this big brotherism that is intruding on us, and we've got to stand up and say stop. We can't give up our fundamental human liberties because the government thinks that they're going to make us safer. It's just wrong.
And it's funny because you have one side saying the government's to blame and the other side saying it's corporate America that's to blame. And I've always said that they're both right. They're both right. And it, when in fact that those two things are one and the same these days. And only it seems that only traditional liberals and traditional Democrats like to tease them apart and pretend that they're separate when in fact that they are one and the same. I mean, is that how you see it, David?
Absolutely, which is how Mussolini saw fascism as well, corporations and government as one in the same. And that's the direction we are moving. We grant immunity to corporate criminals. The public doesn't even get to know who they are or what they did in warrantless spying, in assisting in kidnappings and tortures and lawless imprisonment. All of those trends are expanding, and they're expanding in a cooperative effort between a secretive executive-run government and corporate America. And corporate America is, in some sectors, is doing quite well, right? We had in 2010, as in previous years, more Americans foreclosed, more Americans in poverty, more Americans hungry, more Americans homeless, and yet we had greater inequality, and the richest of the rich richer than ever before, and Wall Street wealthier than ever before, and a lot of that money coming straight out of the public treasury more than ever before. We are bailing out the rich at the expense of everybody else, and corporations are dictating to our embassies, as you'll read in the WikiLeaks cables, what to do, how to prevent foreign corporations from getting contracts in third nations, how to get all the contracts to our corporations. I mean, our State Department is an assistant sales room for American-made weapons, which we hope to someday be able to wage wars against as soon as we supply other nations with them. This is corporatocracy that doesn't care about its own future or the future of human life on Earth.
Rick, is that how you see it as a libertarian? Do you see that? Do you agree with that, or do you have a different take on it?
I agree in part and dissent in part.
Good for you.
I think, yeah, what you see in our foreign embassies, you know, every foreign embassy or nearly every foreign embassy has somebody from the Commerce Department assigned to them to help promote American business. That is seen as a function of government. I don't think it is a function of government. I don't think there should be a Commerce Department. I don't think there should be a Labor Department. But I don't think there should be a Department of Energy or a Department of Education. But the problem is that every time you create these huge government bureaucracies, the people who run them look for something to do. And one of the things they're doing is the sort of thing that David's describing, which include, you know, selling massive weapon systems or, you know, selling scanning devices to the TSA that are unproven and certainly are nothing more than theatrical props. But there's still an intrusion on the private lives of citizens.
Rick, what else made your list, the most significant stories of 2010?
Well, there's one story that was hardly reported at all. I think I might have heard one mention of it on WINA. I don't think I saw anything about it in the newspapers. But when President Teresa Sullivan took over as president of the University of Virginia, she quietly changed some regulations in the student handbook dealing with free speech policies. At the instigation of the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, FIRE, thefire.org. Adam Kissel, who's one of their attorneys, came here to speak in, I think it was April, to the Students for Individual Liberty, and happened that one of the deans was there and heard his talk. And Adam had mentioned that UVA was facing what he calls a yellow light. There's red light when the schools are really doing badly on free speech issues, yellow light when they need a warning, and green light when they're really good. And he said that the UVA had a yellow light, and he named a number of reasons why UVA's speech policies in terms of students needed to be changed. And they went to him for advice, and they followed it. And as a result, the University of Virginia is now a freer place for students to participate in First Amendment activities.
Wow, I had never heard that story.
That's why it was underreported.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Well, thank you for telling us about it. It's 5:47. David, before we let you all left, before we let you go, any other stories that made your list that you want to put a spotlight on?
I think the story that you're going to hear a little bit about in about a week, the story of the filibuster, has been undertold and misrepresented for the past year or several. I think that there are hundreds of bills passed by the House of Representatives that are going to die at the end of this year because the Senate wouldn't touch them because of the will of a minority of senators representing a small minority of Americans, and the Democratic majority in the Senate is putting up the pretense that they can only touch the Senate rules the first day of a new session. And so they are going to in January, but they are talking about fixing the filibuster rule rather than ending it. So take a look at what's happened the past, not just the past 2 or 4 years, but the past centuries, and call your senators and tell them to end it. Don't mend it. Get rid of the thing. And we might have something approximating majority rule in that institution.
Let me ask you both here, last question. Biggest story for 2011, your crystal ball for what you think we're going to be looking at in the next year, is one or two of the biggest stories?
I think congressional and state legislative reapportionment is going to be the biggest story, and it's going to be underappreciated. David brought this up earlier, but I think that it's going to be a real battle in a lot of the state legislatures, and I think we may have to think back to say whether it's time to change that 1908 law that only allows 435 members of the House of Representatives, whether it's time to start expanding.
Really? And why is that? Because of the gerrymandering? Or?
Well, not only because of gerrymandering, but because congressional districts have grown so large and unwieldy that it's difficult for a representative to actually represent the people he purports to represent. You can't know them. When the country was founded, there were about 30,000 people per congressional district. We're now approaching 1 million per congressional district. It's like 789,000, I think it is now. And there's also a great deal of disproportionality between the smaller districts. And Rhode Island is overly represented. Wyoming is underrepresented. So, that has to be dealt with. And I don't think we need to add another 400 seats, but I think we should consider adding 50 or 60 seats to sort of even things out around the country.
Yeah, interesting. David?
Completely agree. And if the slightly growing movement for a constitutional convention ever gets anywhere, we get rid of the Senate, give the Senate offices to the new House members and expand the House, we'd be better off in several regards. But I think the news story that people haven't heard yet that we'll hear out of Washington is going to be the alliance between the president and the Republicans on most of the big issues, despite, you know, all of the heated rhetoric back and forth. And I am hopeful that we're going to see a growing movement movement on the left outside of the Democratic Party, but I'm at the same time expecting to see a good deal of resistance within the Democratic Party in Washington to the president and the Republicans in Congress.
So you're predicting a Clinton too, just as Clinton moved to the right after the 94 midterms. You're seeing that as well.
Very
with,
much.
With Barack Obama.
On steroids.
Really? Even worse than that?
Yeah, look at the incoming Republican.
I thought Republicans said when he ran that this is the most liberal member of the United States Senate. Remember that when he was running against McCain? That we've never, ever had a more liberal candidate for the White House and that he is truly a socialist.
Well, he's a socialist. He's a communist. He wasn't born in this country. He's a Muslim. But they want to give him absolute power. The incoming chair of armed services in the House wants a new authorization to use military force to update the one from 2001 to take out that bit about how it has there has to be any relevance to 9/11 for the president to declare a war on a new country, allow the president to toss out civil liberties during wartime and potentially to clarify that wartime has no limits in time or space. These are Republicans who, on principle, want presidents to have all power, regardless of who the president is at the moment, and who want wars and militarism and the agenda that some of the Democrats resist this president on. This is going to be teamwork. There's not going to be any gridlock except on minor and domestic issues. And you're going to see this alignment of the Republicans and Obama.
Rick, you agree with that real quick?
Well, that's why my favorite presidents are Grover Cleveland and Calvin Coolidge. You know, they never tried to expand presidential power, and they vetoed lots of laws, and they tried to clamp down on what was becoming the cult of the presidency in the wake of people like Abraham Lincoln and Theodore Roosevelt.
Rick Sincere, he's online at ricksincere.com. You can find David Swanson at davidswanson.org and check out his latest book, War is a Lie. Thank you both for being here. And we'll look forward to talking to you in 2011.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.